Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Roll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore, busy little weekend. How's it going?
I saw Les Mis.
How was it? The movie or the production?
It was at a dinner theater in Fort Collins, Colorado, and it was terrific. It was tremendous. Awesome. I love that show. And then after going through the misery and despair of Les Mis, I then watched my Kansas City Chiefs get worked on national television, as I knew they would, and everyone knew they would, and yet everyone did not stop from piling on and saying how horrible this 9-1 team is.
Nice little pick-me-up.
Yeah, it was great. It was pretty wonderful. And after that, I listened to some Smiths, and okay. Then cut myself, and that's good. Was pretty much my Sunday.
That's actually that's every Thanksgiving weekend for me. That's usually what happens.
And yet, my week and my Sunday, it was still probably better than the Knicks.
Oh, those Knicks, those New York Knickerbockers. Those guys are they're a fun bunch, aren't they?
Did you expect them to kind of turn it around and quell all the drama over the weekend? Did you expect there to be some sort of turn?
I did, just because I actually thought that they had a good chance at home against Houston and then Atlanta. I mean, and the Houston game was close. Like, the Atlanta game was kind of, it was just like, oh, all right, they got blown out. I get it. But the Houston game was close, and it's because of that, like, the Hawks game, I guess, was more surprising. Like, the Hawks blowing them out when they're in shambles doesn't really surprise me, but it looked like they were turning the corner a little.
Yeah, and it's kind of an interesting thing is it's interesting how we perceive things, because if, like, when the Knicks against the Rockets, it's like, well, you know, they lost that game, but they showed some really good things, and, you know, maybe they're starting to figure it out a little bit, and then they turn around and completely poo the bed versus the Hawks, which is a team you don't want to do that against. Like, that's the Hawks are pretty good, you and I agree, but that's not a team that you want to get blown out by.
Not at home.
Not at home. And so it's like, well, yeah, they showed some things, but then they completely regressed. And it's like they keep having – the blowout losses keep taking away any sort of progress that they seem to make.
Do you think in that Hawks game – it's kind of hard to put my finger on what went wrong. Do you think J.R. Smith's 7 points on 3-for-18 shooting was an issue?
I shouldn't comment. You know, it's JR, and this is what they brought him on to do. And when he's hitting shots, everyone loves him, and he's the sixth man of the year, according to the media. So, look, this is JR Smith. This isn't...
I don't know. That's a pretty extreme JR Smith game.
I just feel like... I do feel like you gave him the contract. Like, and he keeps having all these other things that are complicated. I don't know. I guess my question is this. Do you feel like he is getting himself in the best position to play and just not making shots? Because I don't. I feel like he's just all over the place, and he cares, but he doesn't care enough to change.
No, I don't feel like he – it's not like he's playing good basketball and just missing shots. Like, I last year, I think you and I disagree on this, but I actually loved – the way he attacked. I thought it was an intelligent way to use his role, and I thought he, for the most part, he was getting good shots. Now, he had these extreme J.R. Smith moments where he'd go on these swings, and it would look really awful, and, like, you know, the hilarity would ensue. But for the most part, I thought he was executing what he was supposed to do quite well. That's not happening so far this year. I'm actually shocked that he's shooting 22%. I thought it was much lower. And that's not me, like, that's not me trying to, like, make fun of him or anything. Like, it's just, that's how bad he's looked out there.
He's going to have one of those nights, though, when the throws at the rim go in, and it'll look better. And you know, maybe that's just it. Because here's, I mean, I do want to say this very plainly. I've been an outspoken critic of their entire team concept in terms of how much they rely on Melo and drive everything around it. But I have no complaints with Carmelo Anthony. Like, he's driving. He is in the post, getting to the rim and attacking. There are certain shots I don't like. In Houston, he took a pull-up three, which I was like, see, that's not what you needed there. And everyone's like, well, they were down three. And I was like, yeah, but you had time. If you score that two, plus he may end up getting fouled, but even if he doesn't, you want to extend the game. You want to extend the game as long as possible, especially with Houston, because they act a little drunk. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. So now the rumors are Shumpert. Okay, so here's what we have. We've got the Knicks have talked to the Celtics about trying to pitch Amari and Shumpert for Rondo, which the Celtics cackled at.
Wow, Shumpert, how did that not go through? How did Danny Ainge keep his trigger finger from pulling there?
Shumpert had off-season knee surgery and didn't tell the Knicks, which further pissed them off.
Yeah.
And then now word from the New York Daily News comes out that Woodson is being told by his front office that he needs to play Kenyon Martin more and put Shumpert on the bench.
That'll fix everything.
Generally speaking, when front offices get involved in coaching decisions, it doesn't work out well for winning basketball games. Like, it's one thing if you're like, well, I don't really care if we win or not. I need to see whether this guy can play or not. There's a little bit of that going on in Denver. Like, Denver's got a little bit of, I don't really care about who the best player is. I need to see whether or not this is going to work.
Right.
New York, though, they just need to win games. Like, there's no evaluating talent here. They have what they have. If, by the way, if Raymond Felton gets traded from New York again, we are gonna they're gonna need to put him on some sort of I don't know how to do it. Can you enforce some sort of system that sets off an alarm if his blood sugar goes over a certain amount? Because I'm really worried he's just gonna eat himself into oblivion if he gets traded from New York again.
It's I'm excited for the quotes that'll come out, because it happens once. Whatever. He got it. He got back. He's good now. But if it happens again, he's gonna just go through an amazing tirade, because he's not really one that holds his tongue. He doesn't. I don't think he often has much to say. But when he does have something to say, he'll just come out and say it. I'm really excited for this. I hope it happens.
Thing is, I don't think he'll blame the Knicks. I think he'll blame whatever team traded for him. Like, that's what he ends up doing.
How dare you trade for me?
Exactly. Like, that's what he ends up getting upset at, because he really wants to play in New York. Unfortunately, he's got more points more shots than points right now, and it's a pretty big margin. So, who turns it around first, the Knicks or the Nets?
Well, Darren Williams had a kind of an ugly injury, right?
Yep.
That ankle looked bad. I would still think the Nets, just because they don't have James Dolan. That they have, true. they have a team that makes a lot more sense in terms of fitting together. And if you can hit Kevin Garnett with the Frankenstein treatment, and you can get Paul Pierce to stop pretending to be 2006 Paul Pierce, and if you can get Andre Kirilenko on the court and somehow involved in the game, that's a really good team. That's a lot better than, if we can get Bargnani to be the center, and if we can get, Kenyon Martin to replace Iman Shumpert, and if we can get J.R. Smith to start taking good shots, it just seems like an easier fit to me to get the Nets going than to get the Knicks going.
It's really surprising me, because I've been watching a few Nets games, and the opposing announcers, I've been listening to their feed. Not that the Nets one isn't good, because I actually love the Nets. It just wasn't available when I was watching on TV. And the opposing announcers in the last three games have been they just look slow.
Yeah.
They just – even the Suns, they wound up losing that game to the Nets. Even the Suns announcers were they just look really slow.
It was bad. Amazingly, the best they looked might have been that game against the Clippers.
Yeah.
And, they had a lot.
That was Tyshawn Taylor and Plumlee.
Right, that was Tyshawn Taylor and Plumlee, and they had, they had Blatch out there for 34 minutes. That was kind of the best team basketball they had played on both sides of the floor, and they gave up 110 points.
So that's not good. The Cavs are fascinating right now to me.
Yeah, they. I caught them on clearly a very bad night. That was the night last Wednesday when they got destroyed in Minnesota. That night they didn't look so good. They all seemed to be in a pretty good mood pregame. And then I would say after the game they had allegedly this, players only meeting that there were issues in it or there weren't so many issues in it. It was either healthy or it wasn't healthy. Not really quite sure the details of that player's only meeting yet, but Mike Brown remained positive about it. And now it's...
Did you go in the locker room?
I went in the locker room for a little bit, and there just wasn't anything going on. Like, it was a little awkward, but they had also just been blown out by almost 30 points.
Right, so the sullen thing.
Yeah, like, you just run it, like, you catch a road team that has been blown out and it doesn't look good. Like, you usually walk in there and think, if there's a guy that kind of seems antsy, you'll go over to him and maybe see what kind of quotes he can give you. But other than that, it's just like, I don't want to waste my time in here.
Are you up on the latest reported shenanigans?
With Dion Waiters?
Yeah.
I don't really understand what's going on. It seems like he's, I
have a pretty good feel for it. Can I relate it to you?
Yeah.
Can I tell you my theory on it?
Yeah, it seems like he's in the middle of like an 80s comedy.
yeah, there's a little bit of that going on. Okay, so Wolves blow him out by 30.
Right.
They're in the locker room. A quote-unquote confrontation happens that reportedly became physical. Now, here's the interesting part about this to me. It leaked out from what I probably am in – from my – okay, a lot of what – you and I do this where we – you read enough media reports. You start to figure out how these things work. Sounds like there's one source feeding multiple people.
Yes.
And that source indicated something that was fairly serious, but also very much it was so sensitive they didn't want to give the entire story. Because basically what happened was five different outlets with Cleveland ties, including Brian Windhorst of ESPN, the Cleveland Plain Dealer – the Akron
Beacon Journal,
Fox Sports Ohio, let's just move on, and a few others, they all basically said the same thing, which is something happened. It wasn't good. So anyway, all right, so that happens, all right? And then the next day before this comes out, Dion Waiters is sick, and everyone's like, oh, okay, he's got the flu, no big deal. The Cavaliers announce he's out, and then after the game, they're like, he's not traveling to Washington, he's out.
Right.
Not happening. Like, everyone's like, okay, everyone gets sick, no problem, no big deal. Then it comes out that Waiters was involved in the incident.
Right.
Okay.
Well, and now
the really interesting part, and I don't know why I didn't see this before, that same Friday – the Cavs announced that Kyrie Irving suffered a nose fracture and is going to have to wear a mask. And because Kyrie's broken his nose before, everyone's like, oh, he must have gotten hit in the face with a ball or a hand or whatever. No big deal. Steve Ashburner of NBA.com casually drops a reference this weekend that basically says some people kind of are wondering whether or not that's why Kyrie's got the face mask.
Well, let me clear it up. Because that part, you had me until that part. That I don't believe. Because there was a point, I think early in the first quarter, maybe halfway through the first quarter of that Wolves-Cavs game, where there was a collision kind of out of bounds on my side of the floor, where Corey Brewer nailed Kyrie in the face with his elbow. Like he came down, I think Irving was... he must have been playing defense because they come towards my end to start the game. So as they were coming down, Corey Brewer comes down from putting up a shot and just absolutely levels Kyrie Irving in the face. They stopped the game. He came out of the game and then came back in. I would imagine that's where the broken nose came from.
Okay.
It's possible it happened in a fight after. I'm not saying that couldn't have happened, but he did get hit very hard in the face.
Okay. Well, I feel better then because I was like, I don't like that. No one wants that.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
You know, but I think it's weird, but that would be good though.
That would be good to know that Dion Waiters can hit something. Hey-o.
Whoa. And so the other great part is that the Cleveland reporters are obviously like terrified of what is going on with the front office. Like the front office must be absolute like complete damage control mode because fans keep asking them, what's the deal with Dion? And they're just like, the team says he's sick. Shrug. Like, that's all that there is. Like, there's no, yeah, he's got a flu, he's under the weather. Just, yeah, they say he's sick. Now, I do want to say, though, they looked really good in that win over the Wizards. That was a really great win for them. Kyrie looked...
Yeah, because Kyrie went for 40.
Yeah.
When Kyrie goes for 40, they look fantastic.
But they're going to need something like that, you know. Varejao's been oddly very quiet this year. I don't know what's going on with that.
Yeah, I'm not that impressed with him. Tristan Thompson has just been so oddly up and down. Like, I think we all started to have high hopes for him coming in. And he hasn't been bad, but I just think we all thought he would be better.
He's inconsistent.
Yeah.
And then, like, CJ Miles has actually been pretty good.
Yeah, I love the role they put him in.
And I actually, as much as Jared Jack's driving some Cavs fans nuts the same way that he drove Warriors fans nuts, but I still like what Jack's doing. I think that he gives them one of the problems with bench units in the NBA, and you would know this being a Wolves fan, is that oftentimes the bench unit comes in and they just don't seem to know what the hell they're doing.
Yes, that happens a lot.
And when Jack's in there, at least the offense has direction. It's too often his direction, but they at least have direction. So I think that there's, you know, something to be said for that. So we talked about three teams that are really struggling. Do you want to talk about one that's really good?
I would love to.
Let's talk about the Portland Trailblazers.
I'm in on this Blazers team so much, and it's not just the insane three-point shooting they're putting up right now. It's immediately they go to 8-2 yesterday with a good win over the Raptors in Toronto on an early game. They almost blew the game. Rudy Gay forces overtime. Rudy Gay was actually really good at the end of that game. The last like minute of the fourth and then all of overtime, I was very impressed with him. But they end up, you know, closing it out in overtime with a pretty solid victory, and they're 8-2, and immediately it goes, well, their schedule's been easy. So we can't, you know, they're shooting at an unrealistic clip, which they are. They're shooting 42% from three, and their schedule has been easy. So, you know, they're not for real. And it's like, all right, the easy schedule does matter. And some people argue, well, their strength of schedule shows that it's actually one of the 10 toughest schedules in the league. And it's like, well, yeah, but they've played Phoenix twice, and I still don't believe Phoenix is that good. I don't think they're as bad as we expected them to be, obviously, but I still don't think they're good. And so that kind of adds to their early success, adds to that strength of schedule. But for the most part, like, they're doing what you want a good team to do. They're taking care of teams that they should beat.
So they have the third best offensive efficiency in the league right now behind Miami, who is at 111.5 right now, by the way.
Oh my God.
Uh-huh.
Is that a typo?
That's NBA.com. 111.5.
Wow.
They're pretty good.
Wow.
Yeah. They're playing slower pace. That's the thing. That's why nobody's really noticed it. Is like the Clippers are putting up insane numbers, and they're running at a higher pace. Is in part the Heat are nearly 2 points better per 100 possessions than them. That's how good they are. And the Clippers are ridiculous.
Yeah.
The Blazers though are right behind the Clippers at 107.2. And they are 11th in the league in terms of assisted field goals, percentage of field goals that are assisted. The Clippers are above them, but most of the other teams that are above them in assisted percentage are behind them in offensive efficiency. And this to me is the big key. I love how their offense is working because they are producing high quality shots nearly every time.
They really are. The way that they found Nicholas Batum in the corner yesterday, the way they've just like kind of orchestrated the offense, it's weird. I feel like it's centered around LaMarcus Aldridge with Damian Lillard as the primary option, if that makes sense. They've just found a way to play him so well off each other, and then Mo Williams comes into the game and is just killing. I just feel like those lineups are so good. I mean, it's what we thought last year. If they could get a real center, not J.J. Hickson, and they get a bench, this was a great core. And they've shown that so far. And I just think, like, yeah, they've played the Kings twice. Yeah, they played the Suns twice. Yeah, they played, you know, Boston and Toronto. And, like, they've played teams that they should beat, and they're beating them. Like, they had a great win against the Spurs. I think they lost the Rockets. They beat the Pistons. Like, they're doing what you want a good team to do, and I don't understand why we start discounting that just because they're shooting well right now.
As a Chiefs fan, I am all about you can only beat the teams in front of you. So,
right, exactly.
I'm all about this. Lillard's averaging 20 points and 6 assists. Lillard and Aldridge are combining for 43 points a game, nearly.
Yeah.
42. Against that's really good. And then you got Batum throwing in another 14. They just are producing real. I feel like Lillard is the one that manages the offense.
Yeah.
And the objective is to try and get a good look for LaMarcus Aldridge. But when the defense adjusts and is like, all right, we're going to guard LaMarcus Aldridge, they're finding all of their auxiliary weapons on the outside, and it's working out really well.
Yeah, Wes Matthews is shooting 51% from three. Lillard's shooting under 40% from the field, but he's over 41% from three. Batum's been 40%. Mo Williams is making a good number of his shots. He's shooting 47%, but 34% from three. But that's in that acceptable range. Like, they're just... They look so good. They look so balanced. Even when they throw Thomas Robinson in there, he's playing well. Like, they're still not giving him a lot of minutes, but he's playing well. Robin Lopez looks fantastic. Like, it's just a good, well-rounded team. Neil O'Shea has put together a roster.
How about this? If you don't shoot 0% from three, all of the Blazers shoot 34% or better from the arc. That's one... Two, three, there are 5 3-point shooters. All are shooting 34.6% or better.
That I'm not good at math, but that seems high.
They have 4 players shooting 40% or better from three, and they're volume shooters.
Yeah, with a significant amount of attempts.
Batum, Lillard, Matthews, and Darrell Wright are all above 40% from the arc.
And I think the argument is, well, that's not going to keep up. And you're right, it's probably not, because defenses will start flashing out at those shots, and then they've got a chance to go around them.
Like, you see, and I'm with this team. I'm kind of in the space where you are usually with the Warriors, where I'm like, are they? Because I'm kind of like, they work really hard at creating high percentage looks. They're not tossing stuff up.
Yeah, like, I mean, when I say it's not going to keep up, like, I think they'll fall to 39%, which is still murder. Right? Like, that's still murder.
It's still murder. Can the Warriors win the NBA title?
That seems to be the topic now. I mean, I guess they could. I guess they could. I mean, I could see them coming out of the West, and then at that point, it's a matchup game. I mean, I would just assume Miami makes it, and if you can kind of get, I don't even know that you can get Miami into a shooting contest and feel good about it. I guess I would say the Warriors, technically, yes, they can, but I wouldn't. I don't really know that I consider them like a true title contender.
It's an interesting question.
And I say that simply because I look at it as, if you're going to be a title contender coming out of the West, do I think you can beat Miami? And there are a couple teams where I think, like, yeah, I could see that happening. I don't know that I see it with the Warriors yet, but maybe they make a move or maybe they just make an adjustment in their rotation. And the bench scoring looks better, and then I would buy into it. I don't know.
Curry threw this really weird sideways, off-balance, not very well-targeted pass versus the Thunder, I noticed the other night. He throws this pass to Thompson, and Thompson has to lean sideways to catch it, you know?
Yeah.
And so he leans sideways, but he doesn't, like, lean sideways and grab it and then reset. He just continues falling sideways as he goes into his motion. And falls sideways while throwing the shot into the air, and it goes perfectly through the basket. And I was like, okay, I don't know what you do.
He's taking nearly 7 threes a game, and he's shooting 51%.
The broken play the other night in that Thunder game, where he dives out of bounds to save it, and then Reggie Jackson's like, oh, or Thabo Sefolosha, rather, was like, oh, he's out of the play. I can go double. And so they go back. He goes over to try and help, and then immediately Thompson resets in the corner. It's just, you can't take your eyes off of them for a heartbeat. You cannot. I just don't know. I almost think that you should just, like, risk the idea of Andrew Bogut missing dunks. That's where I'm too with this.
That might be the lowest percentage shot they have right now.
It's ridiculous.
I would just put all the guys on the perimeter and be like, Steph Curry, go shoot floaters, please. Yeah.
And then he did that. Like, I was really impressed in that Thunder game, because the Thunder were like, you are not shooting threes. And Curry's like, okay, I'm going to go do reverse under the basket layups. And I was like, ah, here's where he'll struggle because he can't hit layups. And then he hit like five ridiculous layups in a row. And I was like, well, hell, never mind. I'm starting to get a little bit of a worry shake about the Mavericks. Just a little bit.
Yeah, I guess.
I feel like a regression's coming.
Yeah, maybe Monte didn't figure it all out.
Like, they haven't been bad. They've been okay. It's just one where I'm like, I don't know. There's some questions here.
I think this is going to be kind of – I don't think they're going to be all that consistent. I think this is just going to kind of be their story throughout the season, where there are going to be stretches where they look really good and there are going to be stretches where you start doubting them. And in the end, it's probably going to – you know, you talk about, like, there's, like, what, like 5 to 7 games that just end up being decided by luck throughout each team's season. It's probably going to come down to those five to seven games.
Yeah.
With them. And it's just – they're going to have to hope luck is on their side. I think they'll be in the hunt all year. But, they're just a team that's going to need a couple of good bounces here and there.
Do you feel like the Spurs are trolling us? Because I feel like the Spurs are trolling us.
The Spurs are always trolling us.
Because the Spurs are like – the Spurs this season are saying, okay, Tim Duncan's going to have more shots than points, and we're going to be 11.1 points better than our opponent per 100 possessions. 11.1 is their net rating right now. That's better than the Dubs.
Yeah. They're just I don't even know what to say about them at this point.
Yeah.
Like they're very Spursian. They're Spursian.
Are the Pistons everything we dreamed they would be?
Oh my God. I love watching this team.
Isn't it great? I told you.
I really love watching this team. The alley-oop off the backboard last night that was dumb. That was so dumb in the best way. And it's actually like I've thought, like, with these high flyers like Anthony Davis and Andre Drummond and Blake Griffin throwing it ahead off the backboard 20, 30 feet front, like if you have that kind of accuracy, which most of these point guards do, I would just do that. Just see what like they're going to go get it. Like who's going to, like, Steve Blake going to stop him? No. So just throw it off the backboard, let them go get it. It's a harder play to make, but God, it's so much fun.
We are 1, 2. We're 3 weeks into the season, and so this seems like a good time to ask you this. it's entirely too early is my point here, but I did want to ask you just because you have very strong feelings about the forwards in the West because you like most of them.
Yeah.
And I did want to ask you, let's say that the fan vote is thrown out and they say Zach Harper's going to decide the Western Conference All-Stars.
Okay.
First of all, God help us. But second of all, in what order do you select the forwards and who gets in?
So how many are getting in? 4?
Yeah.
5? 5, okay. Well, Durant's in.
Yeah.
I'll put Durant in there. He's good. Kevin Love is in, and that's not me being a homer. He's that good. He's that good this year. I guess I gotta put Blake in, and I gotta put Aldridge in, and Anthony Davis can count as a center.
You don't need to anymore because remember that they just went to bigs.
That's right. So I can have – so those could be – because I got 2 starting. I can have 3.
But you think right now Blake deserves it over AD?
No, I think they all deserve it.
Well, let me – all right, let's say this. Let's say you only get one. You only get Blake, LaMarcus, or Davis. What's the order?
Well, I'd probably push LaMarcus out.
Okay.
Barely. So I'd still put Blake in over AD just for the simple fact that he's contributing to wins more, I feel like. And I feel like he's been really good. And not that Davis hasn't. Like I just really I feel like it's up there and people will freak out because everyone wants to go to this, oh, Blake Griffin doesn't know how to play basketball and he's overrated. Stop. He's so damn good.
Yeah, and I agree. And the balance here for me is this. I so want to counter the argument that he's overrated, which is idiotic, but I also don't want to fall victim to underrating Anthony Davis because of this, because in my opinion, Blake Griffin has been really great. Anthony Davis has been unbelievable. He's been an absolute monster at both ends of the floor.
Yeah, I don't know. Their defense is so bad. Like, how much is he affecting?
Can't really go to that argument here, because
no, I'm not throwing out these declarative statements. I'm literally asking a question like, how much does he affect what's going on the floor? Because their defense is atrocious, and he's playing a lot of minutes. So I think it's a valid question. I'm not saying that he doesn't do anything.
But Blake is the power forward for the second worst defense in the league.
Right, but they still win because they're that good on offense.
Okay.
I mean, that, like, yes, their defense sucks, but they're not, you know, struggling against teams they should be beating because of this.
I kind of feel like Anthony Davis is getting Kevin Loved a little bit here. That makes sense?
I guess so.
Where people punish Love because they're like, what has this team ever done? And it's like, look at how good he is.
Well, it's not so much punishing Davis as just recognizing Blake's really good.
Yeah.
I don't think you have to punish one to think the other one's been as good or better.
Yeah. Blake's going to get the All-Star. It doesn't matter. Like, by the
way, Blake's getting voted in. So.
It doesn't matter because Blake's going to get voted in anyway. I was wrong. Something about that with this weekend. They're like, no, Blake will get voted in. I was like, that's not a lock. And then I looked at the votes for him the past 2 years. I was like, oh, no, Blake Griffin's definitely getting voted in.
Yeah, like whether you want him there or not, like he's become the Vince Carter, right?
The Pelicans defense with Davis off is 104.4 and with him on is 102.6. So it's a little under a 2-point differential, and 102.6 isn't good, but it's not bleeding out the eyes bad.
No, I mean, so he is affecting the defense, but is it enough to, I don't know, make it acceptable? Like, here's the thing, and I don't know that this is fair, but coming out of college, it's been, this guy's going to, you know, he's going to fix your defense. And it's like, okay, well, second year in, he hasn't done that yet. Now, that's a lot to ask of a young guy, but if this is what we're talking about, you know, that conversation comes up.
Yeah, I will say I do want to see how the season progresses. I still watch this Pelicans team, and I don't really fully believe that they're as bad as they've played. It feels a lot to me like they keep playing teams that are playing, for whatever reason, above their ceiling, and we see this sometimes. And that's why, like, you have to be cautious with things, with some of the early bad records. It could be just that the Nets, it doesn't seem like, the Nets seem genuinely bad, but like the Knicks, it could be they just keep running up against teams that are playing above their ceiling against New York.
Well, this is generally why I think talking about All-Star stuff is so dumb 10 games into the season, because a week from now it can change, and then we still have like 3 months.
Right, exactly. You want to do games?
Yeah, let's do games.
Okay. By the way, over the weekend, I went 15-9.
Okay.
15-9-1. On the season, I pushed back up to 76-69-4. I've got a seven game bump over 500, so I'm feeling pretty good about things.
Going away tonight.
Going away tonight. The Brooklyn Nets are favored by 3 versus the Portland Trail Blazers, and I don't give a damn whether the Blazers are on an East Coast back-to-back or not. This line is an abomination. And by the way, sidebar, Vegas, I don't know what your deal is with the Toronto Raptors, but you have got to quit favoring them. There's just no way that the other side's hammering this hard in order to push this line the way that this is. Like, this is ridiculous. Toronto was favored by 2 yesterday versus the Blazers. I don't care if the game was played at 2 o'clock in the morning West Coast time. The Blazers are going to beat the Toronto Raptors.
This is I would favor them in both these games. I would take the Blazers. You're giving the Blazers 3 points here to a Brooklyn team that hasn't shown anything? Maybe Brooklyn turns it around starting tonight, but they got to show me.
Yeah, until the Nets don't look like hot mess, I'm fading them. That's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
This line's really interesting to me. So it opened at 12. It's down to 11.5. The Bobcats are on the road versus the Bulls. The Bulls are 11.5-point favorites versus the Bobcats.
This seems like a trap.
Mm-hmm.
I'll still take the Bulls and lay the points, but it seems like a trap.
Okay, I'm going with Charlotte. I just think that I've noticed that the lines for the Bobcats have been pretty off. They seem to think that this team is still god-awful, and the Bobcats are simply quite mediocre.
I mean, this has got to be playing off of the Bulls just blew out the Pacers.
Well, the Bulls have looked awesome for last week. Like, it wouldn't shock me if the Bulls cover here. I'm taking the Bobcats because I tend to think that the Bobcats are better than well, they are, but I'm also taking him just because I a low possession game versus two mediocre offenses, I just don't see this thing getting to 11.5. I just don't think that – I think that spread's a little bit high.
I mean, the Bulls have looked awesome because they – aside from the Pacers game, they haven't really played anybody. But at the same time, the Charlotte Bobcats are not somebody.
Yeah, everybody's going to say it's Charlotte anyway. So, it's a 180.5. That's the other thing.
Ooh.
So you're talking about – you're basically saying that the Bulls are going to win like 92 to 80.
Yeah.
And that's
– That's probably right.
I don't know. I think that seems a little off. Nuggets are on the road versus the Thunder. Nuggets looked legitimately pretty good. They looked legitimately really good versus the Timberwolves. And that wasn't just because they won. They actually looked – J.J. Hickson played remarkably well for about three quarters. Kenneth Faried played really well overall. Ty Lawson, you know, he gets a lot of flack for not being aggressive, but he's the guy carrying this team right now.
Yeah, who else is going to do it?
Well, Wilson Chandler was really good the other night, too.
Yeah, he was good.
They lost to the Rockets on the back-to-back, but that's a schedule loss. I'd accept that one. Thunder are 9-point favorites here. I've got Oklahoma City.
Yeah, I'd go with the Thunder. I don't believe Denver is fixed. Not yet.
I don't think they're fixed, and I don't think they're good, and I also think that, you know, the Thunder beat the Bucks, and it wasn't close, but it was probably closer than they wanted to. I think the Thunder are at some point going to be like, all right, that's enough, because they lost both those West Coast games, and that's probably going to piss them off a little bit.
Right.
Dallas is a 12-point favorite versus the Philadelphia 76ers tonight.
Also feels like a trap, but the Sixers are a slide-in. If you check out this week's power tankings, they are – even the win in Houston – or the win against Houston – the win against Houston has been – they've just been falling down the net rating. I mean, just getting blown out. And so this would make sense on the road – I don't know if I can doubt Tony Roten just yet. And I can't believe I said that. give me the Mavericks. I still believe in these Mavericks.
Yeah, I'm taking Dallas because I think Dallas – this is the kind of game I think Dallas wins at home and wins comfortably. I think they win by about 14. This one keeps dropping, and I'm a little surprised. I guess I know why. Golden State's an 8.5-point favorite on the road versus Utah. It opened at 9. It's 8.5 now. I think it's probably a combination of the public hammering the Warriors and the fact that they're playing the Jazz for the second time in a week, and it's difficult to really clock a team twice in a week.
It is, but God, the Jazz have been bad. No, I'd take the Warriors with the points. I'd lay the points.
Yeah. I will pretty much take the Warriors in any game that is in the back-to-back until they face Chicago, Miami, somebody like that on the road. And then game of the night, Pepto Whiskey Bowl. Clippers 8.5-point favorites versus Memphis, who is on the road West Coast back to back.
This should be a close game because it's Grizzlies Clippers, right?
Is it 2011?
Kind of. It's kind of 2011.
Or 12, or I think rather.
I'll lay the points with the Clippers.
Have to think of it. Why are you thinking about that? Like, this is an easy one. This is my lock. The Clippers are beating this team by 15.
I don't know. I feel iffy about this.
Memphis on the road on a back to back can't shoot. Clippers score a bazillion points a game.
Here's the thing. They played kind of an early game yesterday. Like, they played at 3 local time, right?
Yeah.
So it's not. It's a different back-to-back, I feel like. I'll still take the Clippers and lay the points, but I don't think this is a blowout like you think it is.
I think it's a beatdown. I just don't think that – I read some interesting things last week from somebody that with knowledge that the phrase, guys aren't buying in, was used in relation to Memphis.
That would be a problem.
That's the big problem is basically – you know, because you never want to go for the easy answer. You don't want to be like, oh, well, Lion Hollins left, and now they suck. So clearly it's a coaching change. But
do you think they could trade for Deion Waiters so he could punch somebody?
I actually thought about that this weekend. I was talking to Amin Vafa of Hardwood Paroxysm, and we were talking about De'Jong getting traded. And I was like, oh God, please trade for De'Jong Waiters. It would be so hilarious. Like, me hate watching De'Jong Waiters on the Grizzlies would be the most entertaining thing of the season.
Oh my God, him and Jared Bayless in the backcourt together?
Imagine him and Tony Allen.
Oh, Tony would punch him halfway into the game. I don't think he makes a shoot around without Tony Allen dropping him.
Like, Tony punched OJ and then Tony punches De'Jong. Like, it's some sort of, like, cycle.
He's just yelling at Hollinger, trade for J.R. Smith. I dare you. I'll drop him, too.
Don't want to do that, though, because J.R., what was J.R.'s threat the other day?
Yeah, he'll call up some of his Detroit somethings. I don't know.
Somethings. I just don't think that I think, you know, Memphis has looked a little bit better. They've looked, if they win this game, I'll be like, okay, I'm off the panic button.
Yeah.
If they win this game, I'll be like, okay.
Yeah, it's always weird these games so early in the season where you're like, this is kind of an important game. I mean, they are all important in the sense that if you end up missing the playoffs by a game at the end of the year, hey, the games in November count too.
You know what it reminds me of? This is what it reminds me of. So I love the movie Titanic.
It's great. Titanic. It's a great movie.
I think it's also hilarious. My favorite moment is when Jack comes out and they're talking and the two guys pass and they're like, we've got water up through bulkheads, 14 through, blah, 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 blah. And then Jack turns and says, this is bad. It's like my favorite moment in movie history. I'm like, yes, you are correct, sir. This is bad. But the point is that, like, when they first hit, right, and the water starts flooding in, it's not immediately bad. You're going to go down if you don't figure out something immediately. Now, they can't figure out anything because it's the Titanic, but that's kind of the point, is the lower levels are flooding on some of these teams, and eventually you have to figure out a way to shore up the bulkhead and get your asses to shore.
Right.
Otherwise, you're going down. Your big ass is going to be up in the sky, as the guy says in the beginning, before it drops in. Got her whole ass sticking out, what does he say? Like, he's got his whole ass sticking up in the air. So you gotta figure out something, but you're not, you know, in the beginning, all that's really happening is, you know, the coal workers whose lives suck anyway, those guys are getting killed. And that's, right. You know, that's okay. That happens.
Yeah, that's fine. They don't have families.
Yeah, we accept that. None of the rich people are dead yet, so it's fine.
Right.
But that's kind of the point, is that the ship's not going down yet, but you're flooding with water, and eventually you got to figure out something. So the Clippers game is an opportunity for them to shore up the bulkhead and be like, no, we're okay. We figured out some stuff.
Or even just to get some really cool life rafts going.
Like, the Nets winning at home versus the Blazers would be okay, we've stopped the bleeding.
Right.
You know, like, we've, for the moment.
Here's a platinum-laced tourniquet for us.
The surgery is sponsored by Brooklyn Nets.
Pour a little Ciroc on it, and we'll be fine.
Oh, man. I will say, you know, the question of, I'm not rooting for anybody. I would never root for anybody to get fired, and I would never root for bad things to happen to teams. I just, you know, look, we're impartial, and honestly, if the Knicks get together and look really good, like, I'll buy in. I bought in them last year. I picked them over the Pacers. But there is a part of me that loves this idea of, like, what if, like, Billy King gets fired? Like, how amazing would that be if all of this stuff happened? He got KG and Pierce, and getting KG and Pierce is what gets Billy King fired. Like, you know, and then Mike Woodson, like, he had this amazing season last year, and then, you know, his faith in J.R. Smith is what ends up doing him in.
That would be I'm with you. Like, it's – we think about these guys, oh, this guy should be fired. It's like, I don't know, you got to go home and tell your kids that you've been fired. Like, that's a weird thing.
Call somebody. Like, part of it's also is, like, I think about the guys that have to do it. Like, it sounds really easy. Like, you got to fire him. Why don't you just fire him? Just fire him. And it's like, man, have you ever had to fire somebody? It's the worst.
Yeah, you take him out.
The second worst, getting fired is the worst. But yeah. The second worst is firing somebody.
You take him out to dinner, you got to expense it. There's all kinds of reports to fill out. Like, it's a lot of paperwork.
What firing are you doing? That's not how firings are done.
I'm assuming this is what would happen. I'm assuming all firings go like Jerry Maguire.
In Billy King's case, it's Mikhail Prokhorov pushes a button in Billy King's office, and a trap door opens, and he whoop,
He slides down a giant pink slip.
Yeah, slides down a giant pink slip into a dungeon where Andrei Kirilenko is, working off his debt.
Oh, that's where he's been.
Yeah, exactly.
I was wondering why he hasn't been playing basketball.
That said, after I've said all these things about how difficult it is, Wizards, you gotta fire Rennie Whitman. You gotta fire him. It's time, man.
No, I say ride it out.
George Karl is right there.
Oh my god, George Karl with Bradley Beal and John Wall. Think about that.
He gets Nene back. Nene be happy to see him again.
I actually could see maybe Dwayne Casey not lasting too long in Toronto. Masai bringing him aboard. Let's get the band back together.
I'm just trying to think of how that conversation is going to go when Rudy Gay and then George Karl.
Oh, this is how it's going to go. Hi, Rudy. I'm George. I'm glad that you're playing for us. Oh, by the way, you've been traded.
Heads up. We got to go, but I do want to ask you that. Do you notice right now that we've got trade rumors surrounding a bunch of guys that can't get moved?
Yep.
Like Ashik, trying to find somewhere for Ashik is a nightmare.
Everybody wants this Ryan Anderson for Omer Ashik thing to happen, and if I'm New Orleans, I think God no.
Yeah.
I want.
If I'm New Orleans, I'm like, so my rebounding stretch four, who plays good defense, is a good teammate, and causes no problems. I'll move for the malcontent, slow as hell Judge Reinhold. Defensive center who clogs up my spacing and can't hit a hook shot.
Yeah, like I like Omer Sheik. I think he'd be good on a lot of teams. I don't want him on that Pelicans team.
Part of it also with me is like Sheik's a little too big for his britches right now. He clearly thinks he's a starter in this league, and I think he can be a starter in this league, but I don't think he's. It's going to be like the exact right fit. It's going to be one of the situations where we need a lot. Dallas makes a lot of sense. If Dallas didn't have Dallin there, this would make a lot of sense.
And it's not even like he thinks he's a starter in this league. He thinks he's a starter on a team that has Dwight Howard.
Yeah.
That's when you know it's crazy. It's not that he believes in himself. It's that he believes in himself when Dwight Howard's on his team.
Well, I'm not even sure that's the case. I think it was more – like, he knows Dwight's better than him, and that's why he's annoyed that they went out and got him. I think it's more of a, why did you go out and get Dwight? You have me. Like, Dwight's better than me, but you already have me. I'm good.
Right.
And you want to be like, well, sure, but he's Dwight Howard. Like, Dallas makes sense. That's about it. Dallas and Chicago are the only two teams I look at and go, that makes sense for them.
I mean, if you could, it's always the caveat, but if you get rid of Perkins, I'd actually really like him in OKC.
Yeah, I think you have to give up too much to the Pelicans, though.
Probably, but...
They have to give up the pick. They have to give up the pick they picked up, plus...
Actually, I think you could just do... If you gave them a pick, the pick that they picked up, I think you could do that in Perkins. And then you'd have Dwight and Perkins on the same team.
They just trade back the same pick back and forth.
Yeah, why not?
They do make a lot of deals together. That's true.
It's like a girlfriend in hockey.
And then who's the other guy that's on the trade block that it's hard to move?
Amari,
yeah. I still have this idea for Amari, though. I still feel like Joe Dumars is stupid enough to do it. Not stupid, just he believes so much in past success.
So you could move – oh, man, if the Knicks were able to get Greg Monroe –
I think it's a three-way deal. That's the trick. I can't see a situation in which the Knicks win a trade.
Okay. Because that, for a second, I started thinking maybe James Dolan's been this evil genius all along.
I had the outline of one put together that involved Fareed going to New York. You could do kind of a three-way swap involving a bunch of guys, and it winds up with Wilson Chandler and Amari in Detroit, and then Greg Monroe goes to the Nuggets, which gives Brian Shaw the player that he desperately wants, which is a back-to-basket score.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the other guy is Rudy Gay. Like, if you're going to trade Rudy, who's taking that contract right now, even at $16
million? Yeah, I mean, this is where you just start calling up Michael Jordan and inviting him to your weekly poker game.
Who was it? It was Adam Kinney of Mile High Sports in Denver had a really great idea, actually. We were talking the other night at the Nuggets game. I thought it was nuts in the beginning, and then I started thinking about it, and it makes sense on multiple levels. there's actually something to be said for trading Rudy Gay to Denver.
Yeah, I'm into that. Why not?
For multiple reasons. Not only because of the fact that he's a traditional small forward with good length athleticism and he takes mid-range shots, which this administration actually really likes in Denver, but he's got that $16 million, but he's also got a player option for next year. So the worst case scenario is you clear the money off books.
Yeah.
And then you could send – the only thing is it makes sense if you're like, oh, we'll just send JaVale, who Masai wanted to sign to that long-term extension anyway, to Toronto, but there's no way he takes him because of Valanciunas.
Yeah, because that pairing's not going to work together.
Yeah. So anyway, that's my complicated trade situations update.
That's good to know.
Okay. Let's see what we got going on. Power rankings are out today. Your power rankings are already up. I've got baseline awards tomorrow, starting the MVP look, including hint, Paul George and Kevin Love are going to be heavily featured.
Hello.
What else we got going on? Picks are up.
I get to see Chris Paul this week. He'll be in town. See Chris Paul.
I don't get to see anybody. The Bulls and Mavericks are coming, but I'm going to Arkansas for Thanksgiving, so I'm going to miss them. Oh. I'm sad.
Yeah, well, I get to see Chris Paul and I get to see KG this week, so I'm pretty excited.
Are you bringing a shovel and going to go dig him up?
What I just assume he's going to be like press row with me. Because I don't see any evidence that he plays anymore.
What if this is like a weekend? Oh, God, I'm terrible. What if this is like a Weekend at Bernie's situation?
Oh, my God. Steve McPherson and I could just kind of like carry him around?
What if KG's actually dead and it's actually Andre Blatch?
He's signing checks with his arm through the sleeve. Oh, this makes so much more sense now.
Weekend at KG's,
yes. Oh, I've been, and that just means Andrew McCarthy's down around the corner. He's got to be near. I've been waiting for the trilogy to be completed. This is perfect.
Weekend at KG's.
Awesome. Oh, you just lifted up my week even more. Thanks, Matt.
Thanks, Zach.